concluding Birds of Prey by Wilbur Smith.
With the tiller arm digging into his spine, Schroeder could retreat no further. He caught up Hal's blade and with all the power of his wrist forced him into the prolonged engagement, the ploy with which he had killed Vincent Winterton and a dozen others before him. Their swords swirled and shrilled together, a silver whirlpool of molten sunlight that held them apart yet locked them together. On and on it went, and on. The sweat streamed down both their faces, and their breath came in short, urgent grunts. It was death to the first man to break. Their wrists seemed forged from the same steel as their blades, and then Hal saw something in Schroeder's eyes that he had never dreamed of seeing there. Fear. Schroeder tried to break the circle and lock up the blades, as he had with Vincent, but Hal refused and forced him on and on. He felt the first weakness in Schroeder's iron sword arm and saw the despair in his eyes. Then Schroeder broke, and Hal was on him in the same instant that his point dropped and his guard opened. He hit him hard in the centre of his chest and felt the point go home, strike bone, and the hilt thrill in his hand. The roar from the men on the deck of the frigate broke over them like a wave of storm-driven surf. In that moment that Hal felt the surge of triumph and the live feeling of his blade buried deep in his opponent's flesh, Schroeder reared back and raised the gold-inlaid blade of the Neptune sword to the level of his eyes, in which the sapphire lights were beginning to fade, and lunged. The forward movement forced Hal's blade deeper into his body. But as the point of the Neptune sword flashed towards his chest, Hal had no defence. He released his grip on the hilt of his own sword and sprang back, but he could not escape the reach of the golden sword or its gimlet-sharp point. Hal felt the hit, high in the left side of his chest, and as he reeled back felt the blade slip out of his flesh. With an effort he kept his feet, and the two men confronted each other, both hard hit, but Hal disarmed and Schroeder with the Neptune sword still clutched in his right hand.
"I think I have killed you, sir," Schroeder whispered. "Perhaps, but I know I have killed you, sir," Hal answered him.
"Then I will make certain of my side of it," Schroeder grunted, and took an unsteady pace towards him.
But the strength went out of his legs. He sagged forward and fell to the deck. Painfully, Hal went down on one knee beside his body. With his left hand, he clutched his own chest wound, but with his right, he prized open Schroeder's dead fingers from the hilt of the Neptune sword, and with it in his own hand rose to face the towering deck of the Golden Bough. He held the gleaming sword high, and they cheered him wildly. The sound of it echoed weirdly in Hal's ears, and he blinked uncertainly as the brilliant African sunlight faded and his eyes were filled with shadows and darkness. His legs gave way under him, and he sat down heavily on the deck of the dhow, bowed forward over the sword in his lap. He felt but did not see the frigate bump against the dhow as Ned Tyler brought her alongside, and then Abilene's hands were on his shoulders, and his voice was deep and close as he lifted Hal in his arms. "It is over now, Gundwani. All of it is done." Ned Tyler took the ship deeper into the bay and anchored her in the calm waters off the port of Zola, where now the White Cross of Ethiopia flew above the shot-battered walls. Hal lay for 14 days on the bunk in the stern cabin, attended only by Abilene. On the 15th day, Abilene and Big Daniel lifted him into one of the oak chairs and carried him up onto the deck. The men came to him one at a time, with a touch of the forehead and a self-consciously muttered greeting. Under his eye, they made the ship ready for sea. The carpenters replaced the timbers that had been shot away, and the sailmakers re-sewed the torn sails. Big Daniel plunged overside and swam under the hull to check for damage beneath the waterline. "She's tight and sweet as a virgin slit," he shouted up to the deck as he surfaced on the other side. There were many visitors from the shore, governors and nobles and soldiers coming with gifts to thank Hal and to stare at him in awe. As he grew stronger, Hal was able to greet them standing on his quarterdeck. They brought news as well as gifts. General Nazit has borne the Emperor back to Aksum in triumph, they told him. Then, many days later, they said, Praise God, the Emperor has been crowned in Aksum. 40,000 people came to his coronation. Hal stared longingly at the far blue mountains, and that night slept little. Then in the morning, Ned Tyler came to him.
The ship is ready for sea, Captain.
Thank you, Mr. Tyler.
Hal turned from him and left him standing without orders. Before he reached the companionway to the stern cabin, there came a hail from the masthead.
There's a boat putting out from the port.
Eagerly, Hal strode back to the rail. He scanned the passengers, searching for a slim figure in armour with a dark halo of curls around a beloved amber face. He felt the lead of disappointment weight his limbs when he recognised only Bishop Fasilides' lanky frame and his white beard blowing over his shoulder. Fasilides came in through the entry port and made the sign of the cross.
Bless this fine ship, and all the brave men who sail in her.
The rough seamen bared their heads and went down on their knees. When he had blessed each, Fasilides came to Hal.
I come as a messenger from the Emperor.
God bless him, Hal answered.
I bring his greetings and his thanks to you and your men.
He turned to one of the priests who followed him and took from him the heavy gold chain he carried.
On the Emperor's behalf I bestow upon you the Order of the Golden Lion of Ethiopia.
He placed the chain with its jeweled medallion around Hal's neck.
I bring with me the prize monies that you have earned from your gallant war upon the pagan, together with the reward that the Emperor personally sends you.
From the dhow they brought up a single small wooden chest. It was too heavy to be carried up the side, and it took four strong seamen on the block and tackle to lift it to the Golden Bough's deck. Fasilides lifted the lid of the chest, and the sparkle of gold within was dazzling in the sunlight.
"Well, my lads," Hal called to his men, "you will have the price of a flagon of beer in your purse when next we dock in Plymouth Harbour."
"When will you sail?" Fasilides wanted to know.
"All is in readiness," Hal replied. "But tell me, what news of General Nazit?" Fasilides looked at him shrewdly.
"No news. After the coronation she disappeared, and the tabernacle of Mary with her. Some say she has gone back into the mountains whence she came."
Hal's face darkened. "I will sail on tomorrow morning's tide, Father. And I thank you and the Emperor for your charity and your blessings." The following morning, Hal was on deck 2 hours before sunrise, and all the ship was awake. The excitement that always attended departure gripped the Golden Bough. Only Hal was unaffected by it. The sense of loss and betrayal was heavy upon him. Though she had made no promise, he had hoped with all his heart that Judith Nazit might come. Now, as he made his final tour of inspection of the ship, he steadfastly refrained from looking back towards the shore. Ned came to him.
"The tide is turned, Captain, and the wind stands fair to weather Dalak Island on a single tack."
Hal could delay no longer. "Up anchor, Mr. Tyler. Set all plain sail. Take us south to Elephant Lagoon. We have some unfinished business thereabouts." Ned Tyler and Big Daniel grinned at the prospect of reclaiming their share of the treasure that they knew was hidden there. The canvas billowed out from her yards, and the Golden Bough shook herself and came awake. Her bows swung round and steadied as they pointed at the entrance to the open sea. Hal stood, his hands clasped behind his back, and stared straight ahead. Abberley came to him then with a cloak over his arm, and when Hal turned to him he shook it out and lifted it high for his appraisal.
"The Croix Patie. The same as your father wore at the beginning of every voyage."
"Where did you get that, Abele?"
"I had it made for you in Zola while you lay wounded. You have earned the right to wear it."
He spread it over Hal's shoulders and stood back to appraise him.
"You look like your father did on the first day I saw him."
Those words gave Hal such pleasure as to lighten his somber mood.
"Deck!"
The hail from the lookout rang out the lightning sky.
"Masthead!"
Hal threw his head back and looked up.
"Signal from the shore!"
Hal turned quickly with the cloak swirling about him. Above the walls of Zula, three bright red lights hung in the dawn sky, and as he watched, they floated gracefully back to Earth.
Three Chinese rockets, Abberley said. The recall signal.
Put the ship about, please, Mr. Tyler, said Hal, and went to the rail as the ship swung round.
Boat putting out from the port, came Abberley's hail.
Hal peered ahead, and out of the gloom saw the shape of a small dhow coming to meet them. As the range closed and the light strengthened, he felt his heart leap and his breath come shorter. In the bows stood a figure in unfamiliar garb, a woman who wore a blue caftan and a headcloth of the same colour. As the boat drew alongside, she lifted the cloth from her head, and Hal saw the glorious dark crown of her hair. He was waiting for her at the entry port. When Judith Nazet stepped onto the deck, he greeted her awkwardly.
"Good morrow, General Nazet." "I am a general no longer. Now I am only a common maid named Judith." "You are welcome, Judith."
"I came as soon as I was able." Her voice was husky and uncertain. "Now at last Iyasu is crowned, and the tabernacle has gone back to its resting place in the mountains."
"I had despaired of you," he said.
"No, Eltazar, never do that," she answered him.
With surprise, Hal saw that the dhow was already on its way back to the shore. It had unloaded no baggage.
"You have brought nothing with you?" he asked.
"Only my heart," she replied softly.
"I am southward bound," he said.
"Wherever you go, my lord,
I go also."
Hal turned to Ned Tyler. "Bring the ship round. Lay her on the other tack. Course to clear Darluck Island, and then south for the Bab el Mandeb. Full and by, Mr. Tyler."
"Full and by it is, Captain,"
Ned grinned widely and winked at Big Daniel. As the Golden Bough ran out to meet the dawn, Hal stood tall on her quarterdeck, his left hand resting lightly on the sapphire in the pommel of the Neptune sword. With his other arm he reached out and drew Judith Nazet closer to him. She came willingly.